Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast, where we speak with government and business leaders across the country about policies, programs, innovations, technology, and all things that impact the local community. Each episode will answer one essential question: how can we make your community thrive? Together, we will understand and explore the citizen experience. Welcome to the conversation. I would like to welcome you to the Citizen Experience Podcast, where we talk to leaders of government policy and making a difference in community impact across the country. Today, we have our own Crystal Robinson, who is a former director of child care policy in the state of Indiana. Now, one of the reasons why we're talking to her today, because she is also a manager within our company, KL Scott & Associates, and I really am excited to have her here. And we're going to talk all things child care. And Crystal, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. So for our audience are policy geeks like me. And we either look at how policy impacts business community, policy impacts health, a variety of things that the government does for the citizens of the country. With child care, childcare, especially during COVID, had such an economic impact. I really want us to talk about that. Now, you are the former director of child care policy in the state of Indiana. Can you give us a little bit about your experience there and the contributions that the state did and things, just so our audience can understand the gravity of the importance of childcare?
Absolutely. I think I had a really tremendous experience working for the state of Indiana. I started off actually working at the Department of Education as the early learning specialist. And there I worked on activities such as revising early learning standards, creating professional development for educators, and then transitioned over to the Health and Human Services Agency, which is also the CCDF lead agency in the state of Indiana. There I transitioned to a role as quality manager, overseeing all of the federally required quality activities or things that are funded by that quality set aside within CCDF. And then was promoted to director of child care policy. I think what's been most interesting to me is really learning about the things that I think states have control over and things that states can influence, and where there are opportunities to think about transforming systems, transforming policy, regulations to streamline and create efficiencies for child care providers. And I think particularly we're seeing that across the country is how can we use our policy levers to create efficiencies for providers, create efficiencies for families, and also increase access for families as well. So yeah, I think it's been a tremendous opportunity and just really enjoyed my time. There is a lot of attention on childcare. And to your earlier point, since COVID, I feel like it's been even more in the spotlight than it has been recently, particularly as it relates to childcare capacity and families' access to quality childcare.
So during COVID, let's put a pin on that. So during COVID, I'm a single mom, single dad. Weren't there a lot of child care centers closed where you couldn't even take your children to go work? What's the real world parent dealing with during that time? And where have we gone since we're 4 years removed, maybe 3 years removed from heavy cases of COVID?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things to mention there. I would say Indiana's experience was pretty different in the event, in the fact that we didn't necessarily close down childcare. There were some states that had much different approaches than the state of Indiana did. One of the things that made me really proud to be a Hoosier is that we were really committed to supporting providers through things like providing temporary closure grants. So let's say that you had a positive COVID case in your center, in your program, and you had to close. The state was able to quickly stand up a great grant program that would provide childcare programs with the funding to continue to pay their staff, which I think is just absolutely tremendous. Within that, though, I will say one of the things that I noticed post-COVID was that there was a serious decline in family childcare providers. I think when I last looked at the data between 2019 and when I left, there was a loss of about 500 family childcare providers, where there's only about 2,000 now. So that's a pretty significant.
That was in the state of Indiana?
Okay. Correct. A pretty significant decrease. And with that, it was very difficult to find data around specifically why that was happening. But through conversations with family childcare providers, some of the things that we learned is that when COVID hit, you were welcoming people into your home where you may have a family member who had health issues, or maybe you had health issues. And so while many of us were quarantining or sheltering in place, family childcare providers didn't really have that option. And there were a number of providers who chose to either close, or we heard of a lot of providers retiring early because there was just a lot of risk during COVID for them. Now, in the state of Indiana, again, we offered those COVID closure grants. And I think the feedback that we got from childcare providers was that they were grateful, but that's also, there were a lot of folks who maybe didn't want to come into work or were scared to come into work, especially in those early days when we didn't know much about the virus and how it was transferred and all of those things. I think there was just a lot of fear and anxiety. And one of the things that I would say I particularly am most proud of is the mental health initiatives that Indiana has launched specifically for childcare providers. We heard high levels of anxiety and stress and just a lot of fear. And so the state was able to respond and offer a significant number of mental health initiatives to try to support childcare providers in that way. One of those things was launching an employee assistance program, which many folks have access to through their health insurance, but unfortunately, a lot of childcare providers don't have access to health insurance. And so we were able to launch that employee assistance program. They also started providing these, what I would consider peer support groups. So fully confidential conversations with a social worker, with professionals just like themselves. And so really being able to talk through what they were experiencing, how they were feeling. And I would also say that what they were seeing in the classrooms, right? Being in classrooms with masks on was very different for childcare providers. And that's something that as a state government employee, I had to really think through. Yes, I've been an assistant teacher, a teacher, and a director, but I've never done that during a pandemic. I've never had to be in an infant room with a mask on. And all of those things, I think, just compounded a lot of challenges. But I would say that those are just a few things we did, but I would say I'm pretty proud of how the state of Indiana responded to that.
And the fact that the last time a pandemic hit the country was almost 100 years ago to this level, right? So there's no real rule book. There is, but it needs to be dusted off. It's probably not even relevant at this point. But seeing the difference in real world lives, fast forward to today, I know you've been with our firm for about almost a year now, and we love having you. You're a great addition to our team. Now, where are we now? What have we learned from that? What programs have we put in place that actually will survive this because we found out that, hey, this is not bad if we can move forward with this?
That's a really great question. I think moving forward, there are a few different areas that, in my opinion, states will be looking at moving forward. I think one of those things is workforce. So really drawing attention to the childcare workforce and particularly investments in the childcare workforce. There was a significant amount of relief and recovery funding that flowed through states that they were able to take and then invest in the workforce. And I think a lot of states are trying to figure out how to sustain those particular initiatives, just knowing that having a qualified and competent workforce is really the key to quality childcare. Those teacher-child interactions are just absolutely critical. And so I think that's definitely one thing to consider. And then the other thing that I think we're starting to see across the country is trying to transform childcare regulation. And while I wasn't the director of licensing, so I want to be very clear about that, but as a childcare director, navigating licensing rules and regulations can be pretty challenging, and they vary significantly state to state. And so within that, I think we're seeing this trend of regulatory reform and trying to reduce administrative burdens on childcare programs so that, number one, it's easier to get through the licensing process, and two, it's really reducing the consistent things that childcare providers have to do. For example, how can we maybe move our staff files to electronic versions rather than having a huge file this big with everyone's credentials and trainings and things along those lines? So I think it is regulatory reform, trying to create efficiencies and streamlining processes so that those childcare providers can really do what we need them to do, right? We need them to be with our babies. And so how can we make sure that they're spending as much time as possible rather than on paperwork or things like that. I'm trying to figure that out. And there's also a lot of challenge to that because there's a few things you have to balance. There are federal rules and regulations that you have to be able to meet or demonstrate that you're meeting, particularly for the Child Care Development Fund or CCDF. There are those basic health and safety requirements. But then how do you balance that within your own local context and what makes sense for your own state? And it is a balance of reducing and streamlining regulations while also ensuring the health and safety of kids. So I think that there's a balance that states will have to strike as they continue to look at that regulatory reform.
So it's interesting. So you're a leader in our firm now, and we're, again, very happy to have you. The amount of experience and knowledge that you have is very vast. So Indiana's one state. If we zoom out to the country, what are some discrepancies between states that are glaring that need support? Because you're leading one of our technical assistance programs for child care, the Office of Child Care and Administration for Children and Families, and it is providing technical assistance. And the difference is we're not a monolith. We're 50 states, territories, and so forth. What are these glaring differences? And talk a little bit about the project that you're leading for us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of different things there. I would say as far as differences within childcare, when we're talking about regulation, quality activities, even childcare eligibility for subsidy, there are a lot of flexibilities, and that's very intentional. So when you look at the Child Care and Development Fund, each CCDF lead agency has a lot of flexibility within their state plans to identify how they're going to implement that particular program.
And discretionary, you mean?
It's not necessarily discretionary, but since it's facilitated through the Block Grant, there are state plans that everyone has to submit. And that state plan really serves as the application to say, hey, here's how we're going to meet all of the requirements of the rule. And so I think, honestly, that's been one of the more fun things about transitioning into this technical assistance role is being able to look at how states are doing it differently and just learning about different licensing rules and regulations, different quality rating and improvement systems, different quality activities. I also think what has been interesting is that with the additional investments from relief and recovery funds, states, and I think they were just able to try things that maybe they hadn't had funding to do before. And so I think over the coming years, we'll continue to see what are the programs and initiatives that maybe we tried during COVID and have learned a lot or have had a lot of impact. What of those things will continue? And yeah, I think that's one of the really interesting things about moving into TA is just having to take that 30,000 foot view and also recognize that everyone's doing things a little bit differently and trying to meet the needs of their communities, both local and statewide. And as it relates to the project that I'm on, so I serve as a staff member in the, I'm sorry, I'm going to mess this up. Everyone messes up the DISC acronym.
The acronym is tricky, right?
Okay. Hopefully we can cut this. Sorry, Keith, just one question. Am I okay to say that I'm the project manager here or should I?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you can. You can. Yep.
Okay. Within KLSA, I serve as the project manager for the Data and Information System Consultation Center, or we call it DISC for short. And this particular TA serves as the opportunity to help CCDF lead agencies think about how they transform their data and IT systems, particularly to better meet the needs of children and families. And so within this, we're really thinking through how can we modernize systems? How can we leverage technology to create efficiencies for childcare providers, for families, and also for lead agency staff? Having been a lead agency staff person that worked on systems modernization, there's a lot that we don't fully understand about technology. And so how can we also empower lead agency staff that when they're going through systems modernizations to really advocate for themselves in terms of functions that they're overseeing, but making sure that the technology system that they're creating meets their needs as well. And so, what's been really, really incredible is researching, figuring out what is everyone doing around systems modernization, but also seeing the really amazing things that CCDF lead agencies are doing across the country. There are so many out there that aren't just focusing on compliance. They're really thinking aspirationally around how can I serve families and childcare providers better? And that has been the most exciting thing. And that's definitely what gets me up in the morning, is just trying to support those innovations and, yeah, doing and thinking differently to better serve kids and families and providers. Yeah, that's been the greatest part of joining this team here.
Yeah. And one of the things in talking to you all the time, you can, when you talk to people that are passionate about what they do, you can tell what we call a mission-driven life, right? Have a mission-driven life, because you're affecting real-world people and the challenges that they have every day. So we spoke last week and I gave you a statistic about 42% of individuals that were born as a child, born into poverty or low-income households, remain there as an adult, right? It's 42%. That's a large amount of people. Some of that is dealing with the parent is probably born from a single parent, getting access to childcare so they can go and get financially rewarding work and get themselves out of poverty. And that's what we call in our practice area, economic mobility and success ladders. As you see your work, do you see the connection between poverty and childcare? And explain kind of your perspective on that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different ways I want to answer that question. I think the first is, when I look at childcare, I've always seen that as a great equalizer. And so if we can provide children with those high quality early experiences, we know that is transformative for their brain development, and that the return on investment in terms of childcare and early education is significant. There's a lot of different studies that talk about what the ROI is specifically, but we know it's significant. And so, yeah, I view those high quality early experiences and providing access to that, regardless of income or what the family makeup is, I think that's incredibly important. Because again, I think that's a great equalizer. I also think that there are a lot of different economic impacts to providing those high quality early experiences. So when we talk about workforce support, and being able to get families back into the workforce, childcare is critical to that. And so I think there's a few different pieces there. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. There's a few different things to consider there in terms of the economic impact and return. And so whether we're talking about, do we want to change a child's life and change their trajectory, and also consider that there's a significant economic impact to having more people in the workforce, and having both parents in the workforce if possible, just a lot of economic impact there. And I also think there's a lot of studies that will talk about the impact of education more broadly. So thinking about their trajectory in terms of what they'll grow to achieve, there's also some different research around the impact of high quality early education and its impact on earnings later in life. There's a lot to unpack there. And so I think in my opinion, one of the best places that we can invest is in our kids, and particularly the early years. But I say that, and I'm going to kind of pivot here really quickly. Sure. I also want to stress the impact of access to school-age childcare. I know oftentimes we're thinking about childcare in terms of five and under, but having access to school-age childcare is truly critical for working families. Even if it's just winter break, fall break, summer break, it can be very difficult for families of school-age children to manage those schedules. And having access to quality school-age childcare can really make a significant impact as it relates to academic performance, social emotional skills, a whole wide variety of things. So I also wanted to make that point as well, that when we're talking about childcare, we're not just talking.
You know, that's a very good point, because while you were talking, that's where my mind was, 0 to 5. Mm-hmm. And I'm a parent as well. And I remember those days. It really was challenging, not just at 0 to 5, when you're still working and they have to get on the bus or you have to go pick them up. It's not the most convenient time. And this, when I was the core part of my adulting of my children and raising them and rearing them, we didn't have the work from home policy. We actually were in the office and had to ask the boss, hey, I have to go pick up my child. And there were no after school programs. And so we put them into athletics and things that were after school. They had no interest in that. We just needed someone to look after them till we got off work. I'm hoping the world has shifted, really started listening to parents on their needs. As we live in a global economy, and the U.S. competes, you know, across the globe for goods and services and so forth. So for us to be economically viable and remain a superpower economically, we have to really take care of the rearing of children, not just from zero, but also all the way up to 18 and so forth. What are your closing thoughts on that? And then we can go into what you believe the future of childcare will be, given that you're working for us now and you're able to make that impact as well.
Do you want me to talk about school-age childcare or transition to that question?
You can talk about school-age childcare right now.
I think as it relates to school-age childcare, I reflect a lot on my family's experience. And so I tell this story often, but I was typically picked up by my grandfather. And my grandfather, unfortunately, started to have some memory loss and was unfortunately forgetting to pick me up. And so after, I think, the third or fourth day of being in the office, and my dad getting a phone call saying, hey, someone needs to come pick Crystal up. It was really amazing for my dad to just be able to walk down the hall to the after-school program at my school. And he signed me up that day and I started the next day. And I think about the experience that families are having now in trying to access childcare, period. I think I would venture to say it is very rare for a family to be able to enroll in a program and start the very next day, particularly as we think about the capacity of childcare, as we think about the availability of childcare. I don't know that families would have that experience today or be able to do that today. And that's something that, as we, maybe I'll transition to your next question here around what is the future. I think there needs to be a very hard look at the systems and structures, and also thinking through how can we make this easier for childcare providers? How can we make this easier for families to search for childcare? There are some really innovative and great things happening across the country with childcare searches and being able to share real-time vacancies. And I think there's a lot of really amazing and innovative things on the horizon. But one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about the work that we do here at KLSA is thinking about how we can leverage technology and data and IT systems to make those changes and influence different programs and technologies across the country. I'm reflecting on, there's a state that's working on a new childcare search where a parent can say, hey, I need childcare for a two-year-old. I need Monday through Friday, and I want it to be on my way to work. And within that childcare search, they can actually see near real-time vacancies. So I can see all of the providers around my route, around my work that actually have an opening. And I think thinking about the time savings of that for families, not only am I not having to call six different childcare providers, maybe I'm only calling two, and then maybe I decide I only want to tour one. So there's just, I think, some really amazing ways that technology can be used to really transform the experience and the childcare experience, particularly for families, but also for childcare providers as well. I was a childcare provider and director for many years. When we were submitting our information for subsidy children to receive payment, we were doing it on paper, like handwritten. The child was here from 6:30 a.m. to 8:45 when school started, and then they were here from 3 to 4:30. We were literally writing all of that out and faxing it over. And thinking about where we are now with some of the, again, amazing things that CCDF lead agencies are doing, using different childcare management systems and APIs to streamline that process so that a childcare provider may not have to submit anything. Maybe that information is just coming from the CCMS. There's just, again, there's some really amazing things. And I think that while there are challenges around capacity and quality and workforce, I'm genuinely optimistic about the way that we can rethink systems, rethink policies, rethink regulations to truly transform the system and transform the field. I don't want anyone to feel like it is doom and gloom, although there are significant challenges. I think there's also significant opportunities ahead of us as well.
Now, do you feel they're listening now because of the impact of COVID? That disruption says, hey, we really got to focus here.
Yeah. And I think there's also been significant focus from an economic standpoint and from a business standpoint. So many employers have reported that people aren't able to make it to work or start a job because they haven't been able to find childcare. And so I think we also have new and different voices at the table that want to have conversations around childcare. And that, I think, has been incredibly exciting because I think the more people we can get into these conversations and trying to determine what the needs are, needs of families, needs of childcare providers, and needs of employers, I think that's the way that we're going to create some really great and innovative solutions. There have been communities around the country trying to think through different models of how to pay for childcare. There's one in particular that I'm thinking of where they have the community paying for a portion of the childcare, the employer is paying for a portion of the childcare, and just thinking about that cost-sharing model. And so I think, yeah, we're just seeing a lot of really neat and innovative ideas, and having more folks at the table to generate those ideas is always a great thing.
I do think the cost-sharing model works. Years ago, SAS is a company out of Raleigh, I believe. This was 20 years ago. They had a child care center in their building. So I do think that if we're going to have more people come back into the office, companies can really differentiate themselves by offering something like that. And if the community itself contributes to a cost saving model, I think it's better for the overarching community. And long term, the local economy and then the state economy and so forth. So I think that is an idea that should be spread across the country, that cost saving model. I think that would be very effective.
Yeah. So. And I also think when you're having those conversations, it's so critically important to have families at the table. I heard a story a few years back of an employer who was really struggling to find folks to work overnight. And so they thought, gosh, if we just open a program on site, it'll fill up and we'll be able to get folks to work overnight. No problem. So they build this beautiful child care center and it's not getting the enrollment. And they're like, what? We can't figure this out. Why is this happening? When they talked to families, they said, you know what? I don't want my child sleeping on a cot overnight. And I don't want them in a child care center. I prefer to have my child in a family child care home. And so at that point, it's maybe we should have had that conversation with families first to figure out exactly what they needed. And is there a possibility to create partnerships with family childcare providers in the area or just think a little bit differently? So I think particularly having that family voice when it comes to ensuring that they have options and they're able to choose what's best for their family, I think that's also critical as we're having these conversations too.
You just outlined why we call this the citizen experience. Because we want the citizen at the table when you're talking about providing services to them. They have to be part of that conversation. Yeah. And that's the perfect segue to close out what we discussed today. Thank you for participating in the conversation, Crystal. I really enjoy it. We generally like to share how our listeners can get in contact with our guests on LinkedIn. Or is there anything you can share with our listeners on how to get in contact with you, either through social media or directly, or what have you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say LinkedIn is probably the best. So if you just search Crystal with a K, Robinson, definitely happy to connect and always happy to talk all things childcare, all things policy. I know you made a joke earlier about policy nerds. I'm definitely a policy nerd and willing to engage in conversation and in ideation around childcare and other youth and family topics.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you again for being a guest on our show. And thank you, listeners, for joining the Citizen Experience podcast. We hope this has been a helpful conversation. Remember, childcare is so key to our economic growth and mobility. We hope this has been some insightful news. Again, thank you for listening to the Citizen Experience podcast and hope to see you next time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Citizen Experience podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to follow, rate, and share the show. It helps us keep bringing you great content and real stories that matter to you and your community. Got a topic you'd like us to cover or guests you'd like to hear from? Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, take care and keep showing up for your community.